what it's about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Well, we made it to Friday, and the former guy hasn't been arrested. Go figure. He told us it was going to happen Tuesday, but in typical Trump fashion, it was just another lie. Yes, the nation's con man in chief said he would be arrested on Tuesday to start the money flowing to him again. And it worked, just as expected. The former guy took in $1.5 million in the first 3 days after he lied and said his arrest was coming on Tuesday. His followers just don't learn. So here we are. I never did have to jump in with a live show this week, and I'll be back Monday, maybe even without glasses. See, I had cataract surgery on Monday and decided to take the rest of the week off to rest and take care of other things that I've been neglecting. Here on the show, we've spent much of the week going back through my archives, drawing on shows from March in years past. But today, we're going to revisit a day from November of 2016. It was November 18th, and the unthinkable had just happened a couple of weeks earlier. Yes, the 2016 presidential election. And thanks to the idiocy of the Electoral College system, we elected a dotard, to quote Kim Jong-un, president. Now, I had been off the air for a few months leading up to the 2016 elections because in the summer I was diagnosed with lung cancer. I underwent surgery at the end of August and came back just a few weeks before the election. Now, before I went on hiatus, one of my regular weekly guests was an amazing man named Joel Silberman. I could spend the rest of the hour telling you about Joel and the great work he did. But I will say that at that time, again, November 2016, just days after the presidential election, Joel was a media trainer. He worked with personalities and public figures, teaching them how to be effective in interviews, how to deal with the media. And since he dealt with the media on a daily basis, our segment was about cutting through the media bullshit. Well, unfortunately, about a year and a half later, after this episode, Joel lost his battle with pancreatic cancer, and I lost one of my favorite people on the planet. So today, I thought we'd end the week, this week of memories, with one of Joel's appearances on the show. He was great at talking me down, which was really necessary around that time. And then we'll end the week with some musical food for the soul, an interview and performance from the great Boss Gags. Now, it blows my mind that this one goes back almost 30 years to August of 1994. As my friend Bill Mumy says, time is a bizarre river. That it is. Anyway, let's get in the Wayback Machine. First stop, November 18th, 2016. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network.
And now it's time to cut through the media bullshit. With Joel Silberman of DemocracyPartners.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, Joel Silberman, boy, have I missed you.
And have I missed you. It's so nice to hear your voice and be on the radio with
yes,
you.
Yes, it is. So you, in fact, it was actually a couple of weeks, I think, before I went on hiatus that you had to beg off for a little while because you started working with some candidates and I changed my airtime and it just wasn't working out. But now elections are over and it's back to the real grind because the outcome is not what any of us expected, is it?
No, we did not get the outcome that we wanted, even though we have won the popular vote, and clearly more Americans wanted us than wanted the other guy. The thing that I notice is that we now have a president who's only been voted for by 1 in 4 Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I call a mandate.
No, not at all. And in fact, the votes are pretty close. But as you mentioned, Hillary Clinton, I think, is about 1.5 million votes ahead right now. And there are still lots of votes left to be counted. But half of the country didn't vote at all.
Yes, and that's the part that bothers me the most.
Yeah.
Because what we're saying essentially in this election is that half of the country didn't think that voting serves them. They don't believe that there's anything in the political process that's going to change their lives. And boy, I couldn't disagree with them more. And are we about to see just how voting changes lives?
Yeah, well, we are. In a big way. I mean, look, I go back and forth. You know, I keep hearing all these calls and for people, everyone going, well, what if we impeach Trump before he even takes office? Well, then we're left with Mike Pence. And I hate to say it, Mike Pence is even worse. At least Donald Trump, somewhere in the not too distant past, was a Democrat. He was pro-choice. He wasn't the hateful bigot that he has turned into. And I really think this is the effect of watching too much Fox.
Yes. Well, I have to say that in all honesty, I don't know what Donald Trump is.
No.
I know that he's an actor, and I know that he will say anything because that's what actors do.
Yeah.
They say what makes an audience happy. I know that he loves his attention, and attention is the most important thing to him. So, therefore, he's going to do whatever gets him the most attention.
Yeah.
And I know that we've been, and I'm quoting Van Jones here, mm-hmm. in a reality television, social media election where the villain is the hero. Because if you're in social media or on reality television, you get more followers if you're the bad guy than if you're the good guy.
Isn't that true?
The news media was played for suckers for this. I've said it all along. I've written about it. I was on the air talking about it. This is a moment when people were played, and they were played by the moment that we're in. 2016, reality television show America.
Yeah.
And so now we've got a reality television show presidency. We also know the word of the year this year is post-truth.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by that word. I'd never heard a word like that.
Right.
Post-truth, the idea that what the truth is, even though you know that's not the truth.
You know where, so, you know where I think that started, Joel? It's when people, when the dictionary, or I think the Merriam-Webster dictionary, changed the definition of the word literally to mean not literally. People
right.
would use the word literally in a, when they're describing something that is not literal. And so rather than, you know, correct them, as dictionaries should, they said, oh, we'll just change the meaning of the word. So literally now means not really literally, which gives rise to this post-truth era and fake news. I mean, the fake news we've had at Saturday Night Live, Weekend Update, but this is not that. This is fake news posing as real news. These websites, and I mentioned earlier, Blue Nation Review. So I could bring it to our side because Blue Nation Review, when it started, was an aggregator leaning left. And then it was bought by David Brock and his gang, and they turned it into a pro-Clinton propaganda site. Well, there's a few of them on the left, but there are probably hundreds of them on the right, which just went over time. Electing Donald Trump president.
Well, they went overtime doing everything they can to create a false media narrative. And when we're running an election that is based on headlines, ratings, and profits by the media, not based on facts or based on reporting. You know, I've said journalists report the news, media exploits the news. And I think that's a big difference in how people need to think about this idea of what this thing we call media. Media is not news as a journalist. Media is an exploiter definitionally. The fake news sites became a way to influence a media narrative by repeating something over and over again until the repeated words become the truth. You know, I always say that when you look at a bottle of shampoo and you see lather, rinse, repeat, why do they say repeat? Your hair is already clean when it's been washed.
Money.
They say
right.
repeat because right. they want to sell more shampoo.
That's of course. Right.
And that's the message school of lather, rinse, repeat, mm-hmm. because if you repeat something often enough, it becomes an accepted truth. And that's what we've seen in this election. So it wasn't, you know, I mean, I love it. Donald Trump says things. Then he says, that's not true. Then everybody repeats, that's not true. And then all of a sudden, you see videotape of him saying it. And somebody says to you, but that's not true. And I'm going, I'm watching it.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean it's not true?
Right.
I'm listening to it with my ears, watching with my eyes. How is it not true? Well, it's not true because everybody told me it's not true. That's just not working for me.
Right. Well, you know, here's a story that I tell. Back 20, 30 years ago, I was in Los Angeles. I worked at KLOS. I worked on a big morning show, Mark and Brian. And the Dodgers, this one year, won the World Series. And the guys were talking about how we want to get such and such a player on. And I said, well, you know, just put it out there on the air. We were talking on the air. I said, because they listen to us in the locker room. And one of the guys said, they do? I said, I just said it on the radio. It's got to be true.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's how it works. And so much nonsense is spread. And now, because all it takes to put up a new site is, you know, it's so simple. You don't even have to build your own site. You could go to Wix or whatever, and you have instant website in 5 minutes and slap a name on it. Anybody can call their website, their podcast, their, you know, their Periscope feed news. Because there's nothing that prevents them from doing it. So, look, I feel there's real journalists out there working, trying to cut through all the bullshit that's popped up around them that calls itself news.
There are real journalists, and I've seen a lot of them. And I'm proud to have actually gotten to be in a piece written by Jim Fallows at The Atlantic, who's a real journalist.
Yes, he is.
And, oh, my God, what a thrill to talk to somebody who had that depth of knowledge, who really did want to talk about two sources. And you couldn't state a fact unless you could make a fact. And he was going to check you on a fact. And I went, wow, this is really thrilling. Right. I thought I was actually doing the front page for a moment. But that's a play. Not a reality for most newsrooms today.
That's true.
Problem is that most newsrooms have become a permeable membrane between management and the news reporting and editorial pages. And what sells is what is put into newspapers or media. And that's permeating too many of the most important media outlets that we know. Clearly, there's this thing called the media narrative. And then there's this thing called what's really happening. Mm-hmm. And when they overlap, you get booked on cable TV because you're talking about their narrative in the order in which they want to report it.
Sure.
But if you're not in the order or you want to talk about something else, you're not booked. And if you buck the system enough, you're never booked. That's the game today.
And it's all in the quest for the almighty dollar. And this is what's so infuriating. People watch Donald Trump to see what's he going to say next. Oh, my God. He's going to offer to pay the legal fees for people who beat up protesters at his rallies. And so it's the train wreck that you can't turn away from. So CNN ran these rallies ad nauseum, uninterrupted, giving him over $3 billion worth of free airtime. That's why Donald Trump didn't have to spend $3 billion on his campaign, because it was given to him by these TV networks that got some kind of a ratings bump out of it. But what we got is, in this alternate universe, we got President Trump. And Jeff Zucker says, well, in retrospect, he's the guy who runs CNN, in retrospect, maybe we shouldn't have run so many rallies, you know, start to finish, you know, without any pushback. You think?
Well, my favorite, of course, is Joe Scarborough, who said, you know, we've stopped letting him call in now.
Oh, right.
And so now, instead, we're going to talk about him for 2 hours and 45 minutes out of 3 hours, and the other 15 minutes we'll bash Hillary for her emails.
Right.
Wow. So he has already established and baked his character in. But the things that are upsetting me the most, you know, I've just finished producing a conference for the Women Donors Network. And I got to listen to a lot of progressive activists come and speak to them. I was the only man in the room as their producer. And I sat in the back and I didn't have anything to say, which, as you know, for me is really different.
Yes.
But what was really great about it is I got to watch the process. I got to watch black activists, field people on the ground, turn to a room that was mostly white and say, women, where were you?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to listen to that. And then I heard Saru Jeremiah speak, the woman who speaks up for stopping this process of tipped workers getting a lower minimum
Good.
Wage. yes. than other workers. Uh-huh. If you know Saru, she is brilliant. But she talked about how sexism and sexual abuse is baked into the cake. And she does it through the model of service work, because being a waitress is an entry-level job for at least 50% of the female yeah. population. On their job as a waitress, I think it's like 75 to 80% of them are going to be sexually harassed, if not what I would consider to be sexually abused on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's your entry-level job at college, and you get a mindset of, if I can put up with this, I'm going to make enough money to be at this job, so that's just the way it is. That's how this boys will be boys narrative is baked into a cake that include a cake of women.
Yeah.
I kept asking this question. How did that happen? And Saru and I had a conversation about it. And that's where that happens. It happens because sexism and sexual abuse is accepted as normal behavior in certain circles. And I can honestly say, as a survivor of rape when I was a 15-year-old boy, that that is not normal behavior.
No.
That it is about power, and it's about domination, and it's about really a horrible thing.
Well, and now, Joel,
it's baked in is just awful.
It is awful. But you know, the talk about, you know, controlling the narrative, everything shifted with this election, because now all of a sudden you would think that that Access Hollywood tape would have changed things. And of course, the immediate reaction from most of us is it's over. He's done. Donald Trump bragged about grabbing women by the pussy and, you know, kissing them just because he wants to, because they look good to him. And we all went, oh, my God. OK, well, he's done. And he said, no, I'm not. This is fine. Not only is it fine with a number of enough Americans to at least give him the Electoral College, but now in the wake of the election, there are reports, at least hundreds of reports, of young men doing this to women and saying, well, you know, the president says it's okay.
Yep, it's disgraceful. It's so obvious to me. What disappointed me the most, I had to ask myself, when Saru said this with what you've just said, When I saw this happen, I asked, well, let's ask a question. There was this book, 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah.
Men did not make that book a hit.
No. Well, women like sex, and women fantasize, too. And I believe, and I read the book, written so poorly. Hey, ladies, you know what? If you want the, like, the softcore porn, there's plenty of it out there written well. Anais Nin, you know, pick up some of her stuff. There's tons of it out there that's actually good literature. It just happens to have graphic sex scenes in it. This, the 50 Shades stuff, is not that. What's her name? Anne Rice. If you want, you know, really hardcore, like that was in some places. Anne Rice wrote the Sleeping Beauty trilogy.
Yep.
That she's a great writer. There's stuff that even, you know, that shocked me, but I read those 20 years ago and talked about them on the radio in Los Angeles, and these obscure books, this trilogy, made the LA Times bestseller list. That's the power. You know, women want that stuff, but they don't want to be assaulted. There are a lot of people there. I think the majority of us probably aren't prudes, but it doesn't mean we want, you know, we give men the power to grab us. You know,
well, I think that's the thing that we have to talk about, which is this idea that people get permission for something that they should. They don't have permission to do that.
No,
fantasy is not permission.
Exactly.
Fantasy is fantasy. But this blurring of this line and what's accepted, that's what's driving me nuts. What's accepted? What is accepted behavior? So I did look at this election and I did listen and watch who voted for whom. I think that, you know, I have my own particular feelings about how Democrats have ignored their population in huge arrogance in a way that, you know, they got. The turnout turned out to be what happens when you ignore your base, when you don't talk to your base, when you believe that, you know, you don't have to.
That's
you don't
right.
have to defend yourself. You don't have to really do the work of campaigning. You're entitled to it. Well, I guess we learned that nobody's entitled to it.
No, and they we don't do it's my turn. That's something the Republicans did.
I'm so tired of my turn.
And the Democrats did it this time. But Joel, you know what? I want to ask you about something else, because we generally talk about whatever we feel like talking about here. But the media is sort of our entry point. And you did this event. You produced this, the Women's Donor Network, right? So mm-hmm. This is where women, progressives with money. What we don't have on our side of the aisle is support, financial support by anybody to build a media network. We used to have Their America, which was so flawed from day one, and had all obviously a lot of problems in management even. But it would really be nice if we could find an entity on the left that would support what I try to do here. We could use funding. I mean, I beg every day for listeners to pitch in to do the old public radio model, because I refuse to put the show behind a paywall for a number of reasons. It would really be nice if somebody with money on our side got behind us the way that the moneyed right gets behind their media, because they realize that's the way to the voters.
Well, I could not agree with you more. And in fact, I'm going to have a meeting tomorrow at lunch about just this.
Cool.
I feel like we've got to build a multi-platform channel
yeah.
that allows for all of the liberal media that you and I adore mm-hmm. to have a place where they can come together, where they can share a platform so that they have a place, almost an app, if you will,
yeah.
or a YouTube-based channel. But it has to be multi-platform. It can't just be Facebook or YouTube or... This has got to be across the board, so that what we're seeing in people that are using lots of channels to reach people. But what I'd like to see us be able to do is do it so that it's mobile instantly. People can get it on their devices so that they can carry it with them and it's portable. It's got to be something that has the ability to be live if it wants to be, but also the ability to be something people can call up on demand.
On demand.
Because
yep.
we do not work in a world where everybody lives on a schedule.
Right.
I don't expect that everybody you and I want to talk to today is going to be here at 3:30 Eastern time.
Right.
They're going to be here when they know you and they'll come to your channel. But if we were able to say, hey, Nicole's got Joel on and they're available on our channel, just go to this, come to our app and find them. People could find that and want it. And when you wanted to promote something, you could promote it to that channel. And the data that we collect from who's on the channel, who is a part of it, could be a very valuable and self-sustaining piece of property that could support the channel.
Right.
What I'm trying to look for is, how do we support it? The Air America model failed because it was a bad business model.
And you know, we are heard right now, right at this very moment, on the Progressive Voices Network. It's an app, but you know, look, the guys behind it, they do a great job with no support. You know, they're out there looking for underwriters or advertisers. There is a nonprofit component to it. But they're also, you know, sending out emails to listeners saying, hey, we need your help to keep going. You know, on the right, they have 10 times the amount of right-wing media outlets pushing their message. And the thing that's always gotten to me is the people, we, the ones doing this media, the independent media like mine, we're carrying the water, we're chopping the wood, and they don't even say thank you. That's the hard part. That's the days I get really frustrated and say, why do I do this? I'm not talking about the listeners. I'm talking about the candidates. You know, Hillary Clinton did a lot of radio. I don't think she, and I don't expect her to do my show, because I wasn't exactly her cheerleader, but there were plenty of radio shows who were, and she didn't go on them. They take us for granted. They figure we're always going to be here, yet if they don't support us, we can't always be here.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that we need to find ways in which we can multi-platform, where we have to be able to be open source and be able to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
People can't make a living. They can't run media companies to do this. And they don't have to all be at the scale of, CNN, MSNBC,
no.
or one of the other legacy media networks. And those legacy media networks are losing money right now. They had their cash cow election. And they did really, really well. There's no question that they used it for themselves. Now they only have themselves to blame if they don't like what they're seeing. I cry crocodile tears for Jeff Zucker and what I call Entertainment Tonight Lite, also known as CNN.
Right.
It's ridiculous. And MSNBC is just now desperately looking for what it's going to do in the post-election world. Now our horse race is, who is in the transition? And I'm laughing because Trump is a real estate developer. You know what real estate developers do? When they come to make you an offer, they deliberately insult you and make you outraged. So they want to buy your property, and they say they'll give you X, which is an insulting offer. And you scream at them, and you go, how dare you insult me like that? You're disgusting. Get out of my house. Get out of my property. Go away. And then 2 weeks later, they come back with another offer, which is still disgusting, but you look at yourself and you go, well, after what they just offered, this is reasonable.
Yeah.
Trump is doing that with the transition.
Oh,
he's dribbling out the most outrageous name, Rudy Giuliani for Secretary of State. Never happened.
John Bolton for Secretary of State.
Never
So then when he puts out Mitt Romney, we go, okay, well, that one's good. Well, no, not really.
Not really.
Compared to the others, I guess this is the world we're in now.
Right. And that's what he's doing. That's exactly how this game is being played. And I don't understand why people aren't catching on. God knows I'm screaming it from the rooftops.
You and me both.
You know, that's an opening bid, I say. He's not really doing anything. He's just giving you the opening bid.
Yep.
But what I will tell you is that on his acceptance speech, I looked at his body language. And as you know, I'm an expert at this.
Yes, you are.
He looked terrified. He didn't look cocky. He didn't look like the guy who was in front of his rallies. He looked like a guy who somebody, probably Jared Kushner, sat down with and said, sir, you are now the president-elect, and the market is down 800 points.
That didn't last very long.
Every step you take now is another 100 points down. And by the way, this is how much your portfolio lost now.
And it's your fault. But it came right back.
It's all be your fault. And so that's how he looked the night he accepted.
Yep.
The man who sat in the chair next to President Obama
was
looked
terrified.
A lot smaller
yes.
than the man who was at his rallies.
That's very true.
A lot smaller. And I remember what President Obama said when he had his first, you know, the deep secrets briefing, when they give you the briefing that really is the truth, or what the military-industrial complex tells you is the truth.
Yep.
Obama said he was grateful he was in a room with windows that had bars on it, because if they didn't have bars on it, he might have jumped.
God.
So you can only imagine how Trump felt when he heard the truth, which has always been a, you know, fungible item for him. He was horrified, shocked, and noticeably frightened. And that's what I've seen all the way along. So all these old hands coming in, and what's going to happen? Look, this is not going to be good, but we'll see what happens.
Right. You've seen the movie, I'm sure, The Candidate with Robert Redford. This is that. They groomed him, they got him, and he won, and the last shot of the movie, they're in the backseat of the car, rushing away from the crowds, and he goes, what do we do now?
That's right. That's exactly what this is. And what do we do now is the frightening part of this. So now is when these people rush in. I agree with what you said. Mike Pence is much scarier than Donald Trump. He's a real believer. Donald Trump doesn't believe in shit.
Right,
he's
exactly.
He's like, you know,
any way the
wind
blows.
Tell me what to believe and
right.
I'll believe it.
Whoever
you know?
Last whispers in his ear, that's what he comes
right.
out with. So, but 100%. The problem is the people he's surrounding himself with who will be whispering in his ear are the worst of the worst. So I don't know. I don't know what we do from here except keep screaming, talking about everything he's doing, the people that he's bringing in, shouting. I think our shouts maybe have did away with the idea of John Bolton for Secretary of State. We need to make our voices heard, but to do that, we need our part of the media.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
100%. Well, I'm fighting for that tomorrow in my meeting, and you and I will have more discussions about this.
Well, terrific. And Joel Silberman, I hope we can carve out a at least semi-regular time to get you back on with
us. I am going to be determined to do it. I miss you terribly. So
well, I miss
this
you
is a
too.
Privilege.
Thank you for being here.
I wish he still was. Joel Silberman lost his battle with pancreatic cancer in 2018. And he is so sorely missed. I thought we could use some of Joel's words of wisdom today as I wrap up a week of kind of best of shows. I hate calling them best of, but you know, shows from the past as we dig through our archives. And we'll end the week with some musical soul food. Music works wonders in caring for our soul and psyche. So today we go back to a radio station in Los Angeles, no longer in existence. It's KSCA FM 101.9. It had just been on the air about a month. The date was August 5th, 1994, and I had the honor of hosting Boz Scaggs in the studio. Here's how it went.
I see Boz sitting with guitar in hand. Hi, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and congratulations on a wonderful new record, Some Change.
Thank you.
How long were you working on this?
On the album, we started in January of 1993 and finished in December of 1993, so 10 or 11 months with a few well-chosen vacations.
How about the writing process?
It's hard to say. You know, a lot of these songs are ideas that have been floating around for anywhere from a few minutes to a few years, and they come together. In bits and pieces. I don't really sit down and just, you know, knock them out. So, I don't know. I guess some of the ideas are 4 or 5 years old. Some of them were just spontaneous.
Well, what's nice, looking through it, is the majority of these songs were written solely by Boz Scaggs. So this is truly your record.
And probably more than any record that I've ever made, yeah.
And in reading your bio, it says, first and foremost, it's a vehicle for your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And your voice sounds wonderful on
it. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Yeah, you sort of eliminate a lot of other things when you really think about just trying to make something that fits your voice and your you know, whatever you do. If you're a guitar player, keyboard player, we tend to in these days of a lot of technology stack a lot of things together. There's a lot of, you know, synthesizers and reverbs and beautiful studio facilities that we tend to sort of get enthralled by and forget about what we're really all about. And essentially, I'm a singer and a guitar player and write songs sometimes. And it's hard to keep that out front sometimes, though.
And it seems like that's what we're returning to in the music of 1994.
I think so. Yeah, I think things are very healthy in the 90s in that way. We sort of went through a lot of music with in the 80s and. There was a lot of technology that got us away from singers and songs and the basics.
And so, it's a return to that. MTV Unplugged, the popularity of that brought it out to the forefront. But that's a lot what this radio station is about, and that's what this album really shows. It shows the talent of the songwriting and of the real music that's there. You've been doing this for a long, long time. You started when you were about 15 with Steve Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And
I started before Steve, but yeah, back then. Yeah, I have been doing it a long time. I think that most people who have an interest in music probably start showing it, you know, when they're, you know, kids or early teenagers or whatever, and then there are those who find that they can't do anything else in the world or can't put it aside, and they remain to be called musicians. Uh-huh. I'm one of those.
And have the talent to do it.
Talent is part of it, but I think it is the love of music that plays a bigger role sometimes than talent. I think that there are a lot of musicians who are certainly a lot more talented than I am in terms of, I love music, you know, perhaps more. I don't know. You know, talent's as someone once said, a cheap commodity. And then there are those who just stick it out and don't know how to do anything else. Right.
And there are those who are modest, because there are those like me who love music but don't have the talent, so I play other people's music on the radio. Boz Scaggs is our guest here at FM 101.9. You're sitting with a guitar, and Scott's over there in front of the keyboard. Would you guys do one for us?
Yeah, sure. I'm joined by Scott Plunkett, musician extraordinaire, and we're going to we'll do Some Change, the title song off the album.
Great.
Thank you.
take that in two. But like some change in your pocket, sometimes it seems to be too little too late. I guess it's time to break out a few pesos, 'cause I'm getting to where I like the view. And if you're feeling lucky, you ain't just passing through, you might change some too. There was a time I was low down for action, red hot as a road. Certified, guaranteed satisfaction, one happening fool. And I know I was missing the boat, and I know I was missing it by country mile. So like Noah says, you better wake up, you don't wanna get stuck in this zoo. And then he leaves the dock, he ain't waiting around for you. Be prepared to change some too. Yeah, you.
Gags live on FM 101.9. Some Change, the title track from the brand new album, with Scott Plunkett on keyboard. Sounded great.
Thanks.
You are playing tomorrow night and Sunday night at House of Blues.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people very upset because those shows sold out rather quickly, so they won't have the chance to see you. Do you tour very often?
Not so much. It's been a while. I've been off for a while. But we are now. At least we started out with some dates in Japan. We were away for about 3.5 weeks, and now we're just doing some quick ones here on the West Coast, and then we'll start playing back east the first part of September, and we'll see where it goes from there. We hope to be back here before the year's out with some other shows.
I think I remember the last time you did a show here that you were on stage in Southern California. Mm-hmm. You maybe did something more recently, but I don't think so. It was a special tribute show. It was at the Universal Amphitheater, and it was mm-hmm. for Jeff Porcaro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you dedicated this album to Jeff.
I did, yeah. When I started making this record, when I started putting the material together, I called Jeff, and we were doing some demos, and so I was thinking about him. As I was starting this thing, and then he very suddenly passed away, and just the shock of that, I think, left a lot of us since that time thinking a lot about Jeff, and couldn't help through the recording process to think, sort of relate, to bounce it off what Jeff might have done here or there, and I don't know, just his spirit was around, and it's, of course, troubling that he's not with us, but on the other hand, he gave us all a lot of inspiration and probably will continue to for a long time.
Mm-hmm. One of the great rock and roll drummers of all time,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he sure was. And, great musicians and great guys.
Yeah, I just found out. I spoke to Steve a little while ago, who sends his best, Steve mm-hmm. Porcaro.
Steve, his brother.
Yeah. And today is 2 years since Jeff died, didn't realize.
It was this weekend sometime. Yeah.
So you did the show with the members of Toto. And Steve Lukather was there, and Eddie Van Halen and George Harrison at the Universal Amphitheater.
And, Don Henley and Donald Fagen.
Yeah,
it was quite a memorable night.
A real nice tribute. Yeah. What will we expect in the show tonight?
Tomorrow night, yeah, on Sunday. We're going to do some things off this new album, and we're going to do some things that people are probably familiar with from hearing me on the radio, some things that were hits and... You know, some things from here and there, but a lot of familiar things, I think, to people who've seen me before and those who've heard me on the radio.
Great. You've written a lot of songs with a lot of partners. Like, this album is mostly, it's Boss Gags music. Mm-hmm. But you've written with David Page, going back to the Toto thing again, David Foster, Jim Carroll, Dan mm-hmm. and Dave Huff. Mm-hmm. Do you like writing with partners, or
well,
do you prefer?
Well, when I was working here in Los Angeles a lot, I did a lot of collaboration. And generally speaking, I would ally myself with one of the, real strong keyboard player, arranger, writer types and do an album with him. David Page and I collaborated on the Silk Degrees album. And then David Foster and I worked on the Middleman album. And Michael Lomardian and I worked on an album called Down Two Then Left.
And Patrick Leonard you worked with as well?
Yeah, we did. Actually, it was a song that Jeff found that Patrick had recorded. It was a demo that Patrick had made, and then I finished it up. But that was something that Jeff came in. Patrick and I didn't actually work per se, and I'm certainly aware of his work and his talent, but we haven't worked head-to-head, really. But, yeah, there's so many brilliant, brilliant musicians and musical minds in this town. That it seems kind of part of the process to get together with these people. And it's just among the musicians that are available to do sessions with and the writers and musical geniuses there are around, it's just, to me, that was a big part of being here. Otherwise, you could be anywhere else and do your own thing. But I was always stimulated by the atmosphere around here and all the smart guys.
Pool of talent.
Lots of that, yeah.
Do you still live in San Francisco?
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Have for many years and probably always will.
Uh-huh. Will you do another song for us?
Sure. Let's see. Let's do Sierra.
Mm.
Okay, here we go. One, two, three, four. Thank you.
about you? What about the one who said he cared? Don't bother trying to find him. Way up in the icy air. Oh, you played with his heartstrings, and you played without a care. Not up in the high Sierra, you won't play his heart out there. The angels lay their clouds across his sky, line up for him every night. Some have wings, others sing, the rest do lazy ballets in the air. There he's got a bird to give him warning, and he's got a lookout too. Beauty of the high Sierra, and she's looking out for you. Across the sky, they line up for him every night. Some have wings, others sing, the rest do lazy ballets in the air. What about the one who said he loved you? What about the one who said he cared? He's off in the high Sierra, but don't bother looking there.
That's Sierra, Buzz Skaggs, live at FM 101.9. That is a beautiful song.
Thank you.
And, you know, one thought I had while you were playing is it's got that signature Buzz Skaggs sound. However, there really is no signature Buzz Skaggs sound, because how would you describe your music if someone said what type of music
do
you
play? I don't
know.
I'm always curious because, you know, I know when we talked about making this album, I had talked with friends of mine and my management, and we talked about producers, and I talked with people from Virgin Records, my company, and they said at some point somebody would say, well, just do that kind of that Buzz Skaggs kind of sound thing, and I for one split second I thought that I knew what they were talking about. Then I realized that I have no idea what that might be. I mean, I have some idea, there are some elements, but when I look at the body of the work on this album, we really cover a lot of things, cover a lot of musical styles, and I don't know. I've just been following around my voice for all these years, trying to figure out what it is this guy, what he wants to sing, and I like all kinds of music, so it's hard to put a
label.
Just the voices, I guess.
Well,
what it I is. Really got.
It is your voice that stands out, and you hear it. It's like that is Boss Skaggs. But yeah, you've been, you know, classified as like blues, R&B, blue-eyed soul, however you want to put it.
Well, that's a good part of where, you know, where I started. That's my first love in music is blues and rhythm and blues. So.
And that bass is definitely there.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in that part of the country, and that's what I learned to play guitar on, and that's really all I do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is just something off to the side.
I had always thought your first album was the one that came out in 1969. It was called Boss Skaggs.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard that in 1965 you went to Europe and recorded a solo folk album.
That's a nasty rumor. I did that. It wasn't really... Don't go looking for that record, please. And if you've got one...
I think it's worth a lot of money if you've got one.
I doubt it.
Well, that's what we were talking about, though, the return to the singer-songwriter thing. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, well, that's happening. Oh, that record? No, it wasn't my own stuff. In fact, it was just stuff that I was playing in clubs at the time. And it was done in one night. And believe me, it's better off wherever it is.
Really? So you don't have a copy of it?
I don't. I don't have one. And, I've seen copies of the cover here and there, but I haven't heard any of the songs on it. I don't miss it. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about that.
All right, we'll move on. In 91, you joined up with Donald Fagen, and you were part of his Rock and Soul Review.
Mm-hmm.
A great album came out of that. Was that a fun thing to do?
Yeah, it was really good, and it came out of... I think something that I had wanted to do for some time, and a number of other people have tried to do it. But Donald really carried it off. And in New York, he did various club dates, called it the New York Rock and Soul Review. And it was sort of a big surprise to me to hear about it, that Donald's always been sort of an idol of mine. I consider him one of the real geniuses of our time, and with his work with Steely Dan. And so the fact that he was playing around clubs in New York doing R&B songs was really exciting to me, and I happened to be in town one night when he was doing it. And he featured some, you know, some real wonderful players. And it so happened that he wanted to take it a little bigger and expand into with the idea with some other people, and I got invited to do it. And it was all done with just the spirit of what he did it originally, which was just to sort of pay tribute to those songs and that era and those musicians and singers, and just for the hell of it, just for the fun of it, just for the love of that music. And it really kept its integrity throughout it all. We did a couple of nights at the Beacon Theater in New York, which were, you know, well attended and recorded, and the album got around a fair amount. And we decided to go on the road that summer and play for a few weeks doing that material. And that turned into sort of a reunification with Walter Becker and Donald on stage. And I think gave them confidence to go on and pull Steely Dan out of the hat again. And anyway, Rock and Soul Review was a lot of fun. I hope we get to do it again sometime.
It's a lot of fun to listen to. I love the album.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you said, pulling out some of those great songs and having great players such as yourself and Donald and Michael McDonald and mm-hmm. Phoebe Snow, and it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it sounds like a party.
It was a really all for all the right reasons, you know. We love the music.
Right. Well, we love your new album.
Thanks.
However, we still love your old stuff, and of course, you did a lot of stuff early on, but it was 1976 and Silk Degrees that brought you the superstardom. And I understand Mike Morrison, our program director, begged you and pleaded with you, please do Low Down.
Baby's out running around, hanging with the crowd, putting your business in the street and talking out loud, saying you bought her this and that, how much you done spent. I swear she must believe it's all heaven sent. Hey boy, you better bring the woman round to the sad old truth, the dirty low down. Who put those ideas in her head now, now. Nothing you can't handle, nothing you ain't got. Put your money on the table and drive it off the lot. Turn on that old love light, turn a maybe to a yes. Same old schoolboy game got you into this mess, yeah. You better come on back around to the sad old truth, the dirty lowdown. Put those ideas in a head, boy. I wonder, 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 wonder who.
Well, got to be so cold. This dog-eat-dog existence sure is getting old. You gotta have a Jones for this and a Jones for that. This running with the Joneses, boy, just ain't where it's at, no. You better come on back to town to the sad, sad truth, the dirty lowdown. Put those ideas in her head now. I wonder, 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 wonder who. Get on back downtown now before it all gets away, gets away, gets away. Well, I wonder, 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 wonder who.
Don't you know?
Buzz Skaggs live on FM 101.9. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming in today.
Thanks. Pleasure being here.
Well, it was our pleasure. The new album is called Some Change and is available in your local record store. I urge you to pick it up because it's really wonderful. You will be appearing tomorrow and Sunday nights at House of Blues. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. those shows are sold out. On behalf of everyone who doesn't have tickets, any chance you'll swing back through here on your way back from the East Coast?
Well, I hope so. We'll keep that open.
Okay. Yeah. Well, please do. And if you do, the door is always open here.
Oh,
we'd love
nice.
To have you come back in.
Glad you're here. There are a lot of people talking about your new station, mm-hmm. and seems like a breath of fresh air here.
Great.
So, good luck.
Thanks very much. Good luck to you. I'll see you tomorrow night.
It's amazing. You can go back almost 30 years, and it feels just like yesterday. That was from August 5th, 1994.
first time I ever got to interview Boz Scaggs. Did it again years later, but that's another story for another day. With that, we're at the end of my week off. I'll be back Monday with an important show. Rebecca Jones will be here to pull back the curtain about what Ron DeSantis is doing here in Florida. It's frightening. So we got that to look forward to. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'll see you Monday.